Welcome to the Daily Elevated with Fabian. Today I have a special guest, Kate Hudson. Kate Hudson is the founder of Education Veritas, which is a nonprofit whose mission is to educate, enlighten, and empower parents and students with truth in education. She runs the Instagram page Education Veritas. I like that she exposes a lot of what's happening in the school districts and in private schools. So we are going to get very deep into that. Kate, what exactly is happening in our school systems today? And what don't we know and that we should know?
Well, there is a tremendous amount going on within our school systems, both public and private. And we focus mostly on the private facet of education, but really what it is, it's the same content that's going into the public schools, but you're just paying for a higher, better executed product. So they are going to different conferences, which the main one is the NAIS. Their conferences supply an enormous amount of the content and information, curriculum, ideologies that these teachers, educators, administrators need to be pushing in their schools, according to them. So it almost mirrors the playbook of the Democrat Party. You're getting the same type of content, political and gender ideologies coming down, but it's just far greater funding behind it. So within the private schools, you've got many of these places that are having $300, $400, $500 million endowments. And so they're able to really, you know, send a bunch of teachers, students to these programs, these conferences. And, you know, there's kind of a resulting effort where they got to go then get a substitute teacher. They got to, you know, fill these spots while their teachers, while their students are at these classes, and really bringing back garbage. I mean, it's just bringing back all of this content, this divisive agenda that's coming down in the schools. So it's really feels like a lose-lose situation when it comes to these private schools.
You know, I was watching a few of their videos yesterday and I didn't realize what they were. And it dawned on me that they are a massive organization which are supposed to provide infrastructure and help to schools to do their job better.
Right.
But what I saw was it looked like a version of social emotional learning where they just collect tons of data on these schools.
100%.
Because there were just back ends where you can log in and there's all these analytics and they tell you apparently what is going on in the school district. So if you're looking to open a school, they tell you essentially where to open a school, which to me kind of struck me as like a McDonald's type of model where you're franchising one of their schools and they're just telling you everything to do.
Right. And that goes down from the leadership, from them telling heads of school how they're to engage, how they're to behave, boards, teachers, administrators. They have the Student Diversity Leadership Conference, which is a part of the People of Color Conference. And this is started out as a group where, you know, they're telling the kids that are attending this, you know, don't go back and share what goes on here. And it feels very, you know, red flag-ish, like, anybody telling a child not to share something with their parents, that's a massive red flag. So these groups, you know, they're pushing the affinity groups, they're pushing all of this oppressor narrative, whether they call it critical race theory, you know, it's what it is. If you're pushing that agenda via an Ibram Kendi and some of these other, you know, race hustlers that are out there, you're going, this is creating division. We had a school where there's, you know, everybody's getting along, everybody hangs out together, sits together, plays together. And then all of a sudden, nobody knows how to act. Nobody knows how to behave, engage with one another for this fear of, oh, well, you know, I might say the wrong thing. And that's what they want you to feel. You need feel those things. You need to be uncomfortable in the racism that you didn't even know you had, you know? So that is the narrative being pushed by these, you know, by this NAIS organization, which the truth is, this is coming into independent schools and they're independent for a reason. So they should be able to say what they're going to push and what they're not going to push. So you have at the crux a result of boards and leadership, so the heads of school. And that's where really the dereliction of duty has gone sideways.
So this NAIS, it's only in public, in private schools, right?
Yeah, so it's an independent conference. It's a group, and you know, most of these elite privates, that's who they want to belong to. That's where the reputation, elevated. And so being a part of those organizations, it doesn't necessarily mean you're pushing all of those things, because you can choose to, you know, take in this content, say no thanks to the, you know, to whatever you don't agree with or your school doesn't agree with. But, you know, it's very much a factor in these schools that are trying to say, hey, well, we're a part of the NAIS, the SAIS. We are, you know, doing this. We have this, you know, size DEI, you know, structured group and this amount of money pouring into it. So it's kind of almost a prestige,
I would assume that the mode of getting people to fall in line is very similar to that of the Corporate Equality Index, the DEI right. scores, all this stuff, where if you don't yep. do what they say, sure, you don't have to do what we say, but exactly. we're going to give you overwhelming evidence on why you should do that. And if you don't do it, you may not get recognition when you're at our conferences because you're not right. falling in line. I can very easily see how it can be kind of a cult-like structure where you have these people who just dictate everything, and the teachers who right. are on the ground fulfilling the wishes of these elites in the NAIS.
Right. No, it's 100% that. And these heads of schools, you know, it's shocking when you see and you hear what they're pushing and you see the schools they've come from. And it's really just about where can I do this at the highest level? You know, how far can I go with it? How far can I push this until they say when? And this has happened at two private schools here in Atlanta, Westminster and the Lovett School, where they have had massive exposure on the truth of what's going on inside of their school. And there's great prestige tied to these schools. But, you know, the administrators and those pushing it, they've wrapped all of this and, well, this is, we're being kind. This is about our, you know, love and support for everybody and anybody. And wrapping and weaponizing that language is what is most confusing and beneficial to this effort and agenda, because parents are going, well, it feels nice, you know, DEI, we're including, where it's like, no, it's not about that. It's not about kindness and bringing in people and, you know, being actually inclusive. That's the thing. It's not about being actually inclusive. So as long as you fall in line with their narrative and you agree with what's being put out as far as the messaging, you're good. Anybody to push back on that, well, this may not be the school for you. Maybe you need to go somewhere else. We've got 20 people in line behind you. You know, then parents are, you know, dealt that conversation. And it's happened to countless people, you know, that we know. And it's just bullying at the core. It is all that it is. And so parents feel, okay, well, we don't have options, or, you know, my child's a junior and we don't want to move schools, which all of those things are 100% understandable. And that's just life. Of course, you know, it's very difficult trying to get into these private schools in the first place. And once you're there, it's hard to leave. That's why it's so important to expose and call out really what's going on. And you can decide to stay there, eat it up, you know, or here's the option. Here's some other places that aren't pushing it at that level. Or here's some conversations you need to have with teachers or administrators.
So I'm wondering, has the NAIS, they're the largest of these organizations, but I assume they're not the right. only one, or are there?
Right. And there's other arms of it. So the Southern Association of Independent Schools is another one that, you know, and there's different ones, you know, there's Episcopal Association, you know, National Association of Episcopal Schools. There's all different ones and they're all very related. They're all tied in, have the same messaging and really platform they're feeding.
And would you say that these schools, their funding comes from the schools themselves that pay them some fee for the help, or do they also have outside financiers or outside donors?
I mean, this entire agenda is being funded so highly by all the usual faces, but these schools, I mean, there was a $5 million amount set aside in 2020 at the Westminster schools that was like, you will change your curriculum, you will implement this Black Alumni Council, you will incorporate affinity groups, we will have all of this education and implementation of this. And if you look through all of their sources, the media articles you should, or books you should read, things you should watch, I mean, every bit of it was just a complete, just a narrative. And it was from just all the usual faces that you see, you know, BLM, everything. And, you know, it was like, okay, at some point, you're really, there's one point of bringing awareness to, you know, this bad thing has happened, we need to do better or do differently. But when it becomes, this has become a monetary thing. So this is not about someone's, or an entire group of individuals or race, color, religion that feel this oppression. This is just a moment that's been hijacked to push all of these agendas.
So as a parent, or as anybody from the outside looking in, wondering what's happened to the school system, what's happened, public schools, I get that. They're their own entity, they're their own right. problems. But if you're a parent, you think private school is the best for your children. So you're going to, I would assume a parent would hold a private teacher in a higher esteem than a public school teacher because they're paying for that. It's just like if your kid went to a community college versus Harvard.
Right.
So you're paying for that. So you have the expectation that the teacher is going to have more knowledge and be able to make your kid better for the world when they finally go out and are released from that institution. But they're being indoctrinated by these teachers. And would you say, because I don't know how long they've been around, but would you say that they've gotten more Marxist in their education, or has it always been like that? You would know better than I would.
I think this has been coming on for a few decades. So this has been kind of a slow creep, and it seems as if everything came to light in 2020. Everything became exposed. And maybe it was being home, you know, online with COVID and seeing actually what they were talking about and the handouts. I mean, my son received a handout on civil disobedience. And if you don't agree with the law, here's how to break it. Fifth grader.
Wow.
He had homework activities on rewriting the preamble to make it more equitable. We had
No way.
Little handouts on bumper sticker politics of Obama and abortion. You know, it's like we're 10. Okay.
Wow.
We're good. Don't need all that. My child needs to learn to read well, do math well, and any of these other academic, you know, facets. That's what we need to focus on. I don't need you, you know, sitting my child in a group saying, okay, stand if you identify as a girl, stand if you identify, which is what happened. This is how all of this started. So I don't believe it is the school's place. I don't believe it's the teacher's place. I don't believe it's the chaplain who led a lot of this, these conversations of saying, oh, okay, well, we're going to talk about gender with your children. No, we're not doing that actually. No, I'm not. And then it was like, well, maybe we'll have 20 parents come in and talk about it. No, we're not doing that either, because I don't know those parents. I don't know where they come from or what their beliefs are. And
yeah, why would you let someone else raise your children if it's a teacher or a parent?
And have gender conversations. Like, my child's a boy. Okay. There's a boy and a girl. That's what we're sticking with. That's science. That's what you guys preach on. It's all about science. So we're gonna stick with that.
Trust the science.
Yeah, trust it.
So that's pretty incredible that they're having a 10-year-old rewrite the preamble to the Constitution to make it more equitable, which, mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at people like Paulo Freire, the Marxist, who was basically the biggest Marxist education writer that's destroyed Brazil's school system, but it makes sense that they're at an early age, they attempt to indoctrinate and activate or make these children right. become activists and see the world in a different light so that they have that foundation growing up. And as a parent, I mean, I can just imagine the onslaught of things that parents go through, such as yourself, where every single day you're like, let's see what else we got to handle today. Yeah. Like every day you're preparing for a fight over yeah. something that you know that you don't know may happen. And I can only imagine what kind of toll that takes, especially if you're doing a million things, you're raising a child, which is already hard enough, you're working a job, you're keeping a home, and now you have to deal with this other battle. Yeah. I mean, sometimes
just deprogramming,
that's a good way to put it.
And that's what we did every day while we were at the school. And it was, my child was so stressed and so visibly unhappy. And the minute we took him out of there and put him at a school that was not pushing all of that, my gosh, I mean, he's learning. He's got straight A's. He loves going to school. He's got friends of every race. They all relax, hang, chill. It's no agenda pushing. It's authentic. And that's what is missing in all of this, authenticity. Like, you're not striving for children to be resilient. You're striving and you're angling them for misery and struggle because they're not going to know how to cope in the real world. So while these schools are pushing safe spaces, there are no safe spaces in life. And that's where this disconnect with that, I don't understand why that's not as transparent as it could be. I mean, it's just, you know, life throws you a million curveballs and there's not going to always be somebody sitting there going, oh, okay, let me package this just the right way and, you know, see if you can navigate it all right. You know, it's not the real world. So the transformation piece you're talking about, a key Marxist word, and that's why they're doing it younger and younger. The best way, easiest way to affect change, get them young.
You know, as you were talking about safe spaces, a thought occurred to me that I've never had before, but it makes sense from a malicious standpoint, where if you want people or children who are going to become adults later to never fight you on anything, to never think critically, you push safe spaces. So essentially what they do is they insulate themselves from what's happening in the real right. world, allowing the people that are controlling the real world to press more and more. And instead of people fighting back, they run to the safe space, which is right. actually really sadistic now that I think about it.
Yeah.
And which makes sense why Facebook or Meta and a lot of companies are pushing and calling that the Meta world or the metaverse is going to be the next big thing. I mean, what better way to insulate yourself than actually completely take you away from all sensory information that you have from the real world? It's sad. Right.
Yeah. And you and I both know better than anybody how Instagram Meta has suppressed us both. I mean, every day I have people's follows being removed, you know, comments, likes, and you're going clearly, you know, on one front, this is a good thing because I'm over the target. I'm hitting a nerve. But, you know, it's very tough to not have that truth be heard when you're going, the whole effort is to protect children, okay? And it's as much about protecting children that are struggling, that have, you know, gender dysphoria, that have anxieties, depression, because those are the children they go after. Those are the weak links that they say, I can capture that. I can transform that because they're not solid. They're not secure. And that, to me, is just, it's abuse. You know, you're taking advantage of children that aren't fully developed yet, that don't know who they are, that haven't been given the time, the space to say, hey, so, you know, maybe I like playing with this or that or whatever. And, you know, even in the whole excuse, they say, well, boys need to be able to like girl colors and girl stuff and whatever, and vice versa for girls. I mean, I was a huge tomboy. If my mom was like, maybe we need to, you know, think about transitioning you because, you know, you're clearly outdoorsy and you love, you know, basketball and whatever and playing in the dirt. You know, it's just let kids be, let them alone. They don't need adults interjecting their, you know, trauma, struggles, issues onto kids. Just let them grow up.
You know, I did want to bring up this video that I saw because when you informed me of the NAIS, I went on some research yesterday.
Yeah.
And I found this video of these two people. I don't know if they work for the NAIS or they're part of the DEI cult that have been sent there to tell them what to do. But they were talking about how they don't want to use grades anymore because grades are oppressive.
That's right.
They're supposed to objectively determine if the child is fit for whatever next portion of life.
Right.
And I'm just thinking how ridiculous that is. If you're a recruiter at a job and you're trying to evaluate whether this person's going to help your company, but there's no marks to evaluate them on. It just says pass or no pass, which is absolutely just stupid. So let's actually watch this video and just reminisce on the good times where we had grades.
Yeah.
As deeply as we all are committed to equity in the way that we design our curriculum and in our pedagogy, many of us inadvertently are undermining that because we are using grading practices that are traditional and actually end up perpetuating achievement and opportunity gaps.
We're all here taking care of kids, and some of the grading practices that we've had in the past aren't doing that. They're actually reiterating kind of the achievement gap amongst our students.
There are ways to grade more equitably, more accurately, resistant to bias, and more motivational that can actually counteract many of the traditional practices and align our equity work with our grading. Our grading practices.
First of all, I just want to point out, if you notice how many times he says traditional in a negative sense and equity.
Oh yeah.
So it's just there's all this Marxist language in here if you really listen to it.
Oh yeah.
Are vestiges of the Industrial Revolution when we were trying to sort kids, we were trying to control them and manage behavior, and we weren't trying to educate every child. By continuing to use those traditional practices, we are punishing students who have fewer resources and have been historically underserved, and we're rewarding kids who have more resources. And what we want to do is have our grading practices align with the reason why we went into this work, which is to counteract those historical inequities and give every kid a chance.
The current way that we're grading, kind of overarchingly, they're not motivational, right? They're not motivating kids to think about how they want to learn and what they want to learn next and push themselves into new areas. Instead, they stifle that learning. Grades treat students like they are commodities, and we treat grades like they're commodities. So instead of thinking about students as an A or a B student, we're really trying to focus on the whole child.
Yeah, so
that's a video actually we posted. And
oh, is it?
I actually did a post on that specific one because a private school here had just basically put out, you know, information how they were removing college from their mission and getting rid of, you know, meritocracy. And this is a, you know, $35,000 a year college prep school. Okay. That's what they do, is help send kids to college. So, you know, a lot of this, the narrative, you hear the trigger word just, and that to me is always what stands out so much, where you're like, you know, they're trying to control these kids with this grading system. It's like, no, actually it's the other way around. What you're doing is trying to control them and divide them up. That's 100% what's occurring, is the division of these kids. And we're going to put you over here, you know, the white abled kids, and then everybody else is over here and you're special. You need extra help. Which, how much more racist can you get than telling a group of people, these white students are holding you back. You can't go forward because of them. So we're going to have to help you out. I mean, that's insanity.
Yeah. You know, speaking of which, that Ibram Kendi guy, I actually had not heard about him prior to yesterday when I posted and you reposted this just god awful word salad with full of he sounded like he was trying to read the cliff notes of something he read in a book somewhere. And then I was told by David, American David, who we had on, that his real name was something like Henry Gobb or something. So he changed his name to sound more, you know, poetic, I guess. But he also said that this guy charges something like $530 a minute to speak.
Yeah, it's for all of these people. I mean, it goes back to money. It's they're profiting off of all of this, you know, and you have, and this goes for whether it's these speakers that are coming in, which we've had several that have come into Westminster, the school here, that were literally saying children come on this earth, basically, you know, biased, racist, that they want to see someone that looks like themselves. Okay. How many babies in this world, do you think are really looking at the color of somebody? Children, babies, they pick up on love, care. Like, who loves me? Who cares about me? And they don't care. That's a narrative that's getting pushed. So you have these individuals that are making vast salaries off of this woke, you know, train. And it's out of control. I mean, there's a head of school in Chicago who left, Randall Dunn. He's gone to the Rye Country Day School from the Latin School of Chicago. And this gentleman, hardcore pushed DEI, everything at this school. He's now embroiled in a lawsuit against a parent that her child committed suicide because of bullying that went on that was not addressed. So this gentleman's gone on to the Rye Country Day School, and someone ran into a person that works there and was like, so how's everything going? Gosh, it must be, you know, difficult now. He's here. It must be crazy. And they were like, no, it's actually never been better. There's not an ounce of this agenda going on because the board has their claws, you know, in him. They're not letting him sidestep at all with this agenda. And so, and he's good with it. You know, it's like, go where the money is. And, you know, that seems to be the case for a lot of folks, whether it's in politics or education or any of these organizations that are fueling this.
You said something interesting that I've been thinking about lately, is that when these woke Marxists are removed from the equation, there's peace. There's only confusion and stress when these people come in and tell you that you're not doing something right. It's just bloated bureaucracy. These DEI experts, they don't provide anything. They don't want to go out and compete with other people in the market of ideas, which is capitalism.
Right.
So they invent this. Exactly. So they invent this self-worth and they press it on people and say, well, you need to pay us because we're actually helping you. But we're going to tell you how we're going to help you. You were fine before, but you weren't fine because we're telling you weren't fine. It's this, like you said, a reprogramming of what's normal. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's a parasitic mentality.
Right. Well, there's no, as you said, there's no idea. There's nothing to back up any of this. It's just because you try and challenge these individuals and they can't argue the point. I mean, look at all that's going on, and so much of it's backfiring now, where it's like this oppressor group. Now look at, you know, what's going on with the Palestinian-Israeli issue within education and within these universities. Now it's
that
all
was
turning on folks, where it's like, wait a minute, maybe that wasn't a great idea, or, you know, you see the ship is starting to sink.
I'd actually like to bring up that video of Ibram Kendi, because he sounds a lot like the two gentlemen that we just heard using those words, tradition, just white and equity and all these word salad.
Words.
Exactly. And that's what I think anyone listening should really focus on, is the words.
Right.
So let me actually bring that up here, because when I heard it, like, this is really, I couldn't believe this guy is a quote unquote self-proclaimed expert.
Oh yeah.
I don't think white people worldwide have really reckoned with how much their own personal identity is shaped by constructions of whiteness, and how much that construction of whiteness prevents white people from connecting to humanity. In other words, recognizing that when you recognize that you are part and parcel of humanity, in other words, you're not over humanity, right? It allows you to really be able to connect to people who don't look like you, who have kinky hair, who have dark skin, and to see yourself in them. And it's whiteness that prevents that. right? And when you're not able to see yourself in other human beings, that creates all sorts of problems. But not just societal problems, personal problems that I think hopefully this film and this work will liberate those folks from. So I think it's liberating all the way around, right? I think it will liberate, you know, really all of us because, you know, we've all been told a lie about ourselves and other people.
The funny part is the lady at the end says, oof, like yeah. She just heard a bombshell.
Yeah.
And they clap.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's tough to listen to that because it feels just like this charade. I mean, you hear that and you see people championing that narrative and you're going, my God, I can go to the gas station and have a great connection with anybody down there. I can go to, you know, whatever part of town and meet someone who doesn't look like myself and find a connection with them through just engaging authentically with somebody, being genuine, asking, how are you today? Oh, I don't know. It's kind of a rough day. You and me both, you know, like it's, and fostering conversation with individuals that you maybe don't look like you, but you're not doing it because there's some agenda that you need to do this. You're being told, you know, it's just this, the charade of it all, it feels like a circus.
I mean, absolutely.
I'm a hard time listening to
it. Yeah, no, it's horrible. But I get what they're doing is right. Number one is they're trying to remove free critical thinking and just talking to someone without any preconceived notions or right. Without I guess being afraid because so right. Now you're not supposed to approach someone and assume their pronouns. So are you going to go talk to someone if yeah. Immediately you're going to offend them when you say hello and
right.
How do you mention them? No. So you're not going to talk to those people and right. A market phrase, Marxism cannot survive in a marketplace of free ideas. So what do? You remove the marketplace and you remove the ability for people to be in that marketplace and only listen to the narrative being pushed by the cult leaders.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, here's your set of rules. This is how you're to engage. This is how you speak. We're going to reinvent grammar. We're going to reinvent everything. What's acceptable. What's not. I mean, set a society up so complicated and so many artificial pressures on it. And then it dissolves because you're not able to function in truth and reality. I mean, it's just a false sense of reality is all that's being created.
Absolutely. And Hegel, the philosopher, talks about creating what he calls a synthesis, which is you take what is and you take the antithesis and then you create a new reality. So that's essentially what they're trying to do by having this oppressor, oppressive class of people. What's normal? What's right. The opposite? And you take those and you create a new reality that everyone has to abide by. But like I said, it's just parasitic. And the fact that they're doing it to children and they're grooming children is, I believe, the most abhorrent thing that I've seen done in my lifetime because it's not done from a place of kindness. It's done from a place of maliciousness.
100%. And trying to control and create these activists. So you have even, you know, the NAIS, they have bits on activism, okay? So this is what we're raising up. Just activism, that's all that matters. Never mind the truth, because now you have children just being activists for the sake of it, because it's the thing to do. It's what's popular, it's what's out there. And they have no understanding of the history, the conflicts, you know, the truth of what really happened in some of these countries and, you know, from different races, religions, different issues that these countries have been through. And all they see is, okay, well, this is what this party is putting down that I'm supposed to be championing. So that's who I'm going for. Instead of saying, well, wait a minute, you know, what happened here? What is the information? What, you know, why are we doing this? And it's as dangerous to be an activist, you know, without that knowledge as it is to not be one. I mean, so they're damaging the entire effort to genuinely help people and help, you know, folks or groups that are in a tough situation or have something wrong, you know, you're watering it down. So,
you know, and also what I see them doing is They are sucking the life energy out of children into things that are bad for them. So, for instance, kids have an abundance of energy. They do not stop.
Right.
And typically, in a regular world like we used to have, they would put that energy into sports, into playing with friends, into being outside, expending energy. But if you remove sports from the equation, if you introduce women, men into women's sports, thereby making the women not want to play sports, if you vilify going to church and do all these activities and hang out with your friends, where do you put your energy? On your cell phone. And all you see on your cell phone is activist type narratives being pushed through the algorithm. So they're essentially stopping you from doing all this so that you can only do one thing. Focus on being an activist. It's horrible. Yeah.
Demonize all of that which is good, whether your religion, whether it's, you know, going to church, whether it's, you know, after school stuff, activities, you know, the white male athlete, that's bottom of the barrel in the private schools. Like, they're the worst of the worst. That's who is gone after now. So the administrators who don't coach, teach, they're just listening for microaggressions. You've got groups of kids that are doing the same thing, you know, just the constant effort on that front to really, you know, undermine these kids and make them feel like they're the worst thing on the planet. You know, they're all that's wrong with the world.
So I have two ideas of the future with this subject, and they're actually both positive. So you let me know if I'm on the right track, if I'm completely wrong, or maybe I'm missing something. But this generation is really the first to be, since the first Marxist kind of takeover, whatever, this is the first generation where the kids have been just completely inundated into this new world, and they're dealing with all this stuff. Okay, sure. Some are thinking it's cool right now. When all these children hit teenage years and past the teenage years and get over this, number one, I really believe, especially parents that transition children, that there's going to be a ton of heartache, tons of families broken up, tons of angst, anger, resentment from these children to their parents. And the second thing is, the next generation. So kids always want to do the exact opposite of what their parents do. They think their parents are not cool. Like, there's so many celebrities that are huge celebrities that say, my children, they don't even think I'm cool. They want to go see this person. So if we're pushing this so hard on kids, at one point our kids, which are naturally rebellious, going to just be like, this is stupid. And I believe turn conservative, because it's the opposite of what's normal.
I think a lot of kids that are in the know are doing that. And it's kind of sad, because what you see and feel is, okay, well, my parents aren't standing up for me. You know, I know this is bogus. Why are these teachers pushing this? Why do I have to write my paper with left-leaning views so I can get an A? You know, why am I having to, you know, front this and have this done to me? So, because parents are telling kids, oh, just keep your head down, just let's get through. That's the wrong thing. Like, you know, you're not teaching your children, number one, that you will stand up for what's right, true, and protect them at all costs, their heart, their mind, their spirit. You're teaching them that, number one. And number two, how you go forward in the world and you show bravery, you stand up for what's right, whether, and there may be instances where something really wrong is being done to somebody else, and you don't, and a child doesn't step in because, well, they're taught to just sit back and let it pass. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of lessons that are being failed here. And I think, you know, as well, this group of kids coming up right now has got the highest rates of depression, anxiety, you know, suicidality, all of this. And it, and so much that's being pushed on them is flourishing because of, you know, the social contagion. You have girls saying, well, hey, so-and-so is pansexual this week, so I'm to be, you know, bisexual, or, you know, that's not a realm kids need to be involved in. And their mind needs to be a center focus, just like, you know, walking in a classroom and there's pride flags, it it's not about adults being whatever they are, or even if a child is, but sexuality does not need to be the center of the classroom. And that's how, you know, the weaponization of this as well is like, oh, well, you don't want your children to be around gay kids, or you don't like transgender people. No, that's how it's being weaponized, though. Yeah. That is how the argument's being weaponized. It has nothing to do with that. And everybody should be what they want to be and who they want to be. But you do not need to be pushing gender ideologies and sexuality stuff on children that haven't even maybe gotten to the point, or if that's something that's crossing their mind. I mean, it's just kind of, in my opinion, you remove a child's innocence and introduce them to things that they aren't ready for. That's abuse.
So as a parent, or just as a concerned citizen, what could someone do in the private school system to combat this? Because I know in the public school system, you have your school boards and all right. that, but I actually don't know what type of organizational structure they have in the private school system. So maybe you can just illuminate some of that.
So within the private schools, really the people that need to be holding the line on the mission and adherence to that fiduciary responsibilities is the board. Okay, so they're in charge of the head of school. You know, they're kind of the ones that are able to call the shots, are able to rein in heads of school. And so when you have basically a situation, which is most of these elite private schools, where the boards are frozen in fear. They have
these aren't the public school boards. These are private school boards.
Private school boards. So these are people that are put into position because you can, number one, donate. You fit the identity profile. You're able to push the narrative, you know, amplify it maybe better. You're in a position to do that. So those are a lot of the criterion that are being, you know, sought after for board members. And so what they end up with is, you know, a roll along person who, you know, yes, pass along, just a yes man, basically.
And they're not voted on by the parents or by regular people. This is just insider stuff.
They're implemented. Yes. And so, you know, these individuals in themselves, you know, they want to be, they love the position and they love to be in that arena. And hey, we're in the, you know, we're in the club. We're the ones that are in the inner circle. But that inner circle is so poisoned with, you know, it's just weakness. Like nobody can stand up, will stand up and say, hey, this is not what we should be doing. Our kids need to be educated, and we're falling down on that because we're trying to, you know, make this school a place for everybody. So you have struggles, we'll fix that. We'll water down the curriculum. You know, we'll give you extra time. We'll let you do APs regardless of your ability to do it. It's doing a disservice to those kids and setting them up to fail. Okay. I don't want my kid to be told, oh, you're fabulous. You're wonderful. You're just the best. You're going to be just fabulous. Wonderful. Okay. What does that mean to my child? If he's not earned anything or done anything to warrant those positive feelings, you don't get your confidence from somebody saying you're awesome. You're great. You're affirmed. I see you. Okay. That is not reality. Once again, you know, you gain confidence through mastery, period. And whether it's mastering your emotions, mastering, you know, a sport of some kind, math, being a fabulous reader, artist, whatever it is, the more you build on yourself, that's where confidence comes from. And that's the piece that these schools are purposefully deleting.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes along with their inability to compete. So they want to create a new hierarchy where the people who do nothing are the ones who run things.
Exactly.
Because like you said, when you have mastery of something, that along with that comes pride. I am the best athlete. I am the best painter. But if everyone is the same,
right,
then why would you ever, you know,
what's
try
the incentive?
Harder?
Yeah.
What's the incentive?
Why should I work harder if we're all just going to get a passing grade? And that, there you have it, like communism right there. You know, what's the point? And so you develop a society of mediocrity and low achievement and struggle. And it's just, it's not the way. But
one of a perfect example to go along with what we're talking about now is there's a picture in China where they have the workers, you know, communist workers that get paid and told what to do by the government. Right. They're sweeping the streets, these massive streets with brooms, individual right. brooms. So someone was talking to them and said, hey, why don't you just use a machine that can do the job of like 20 people?
Right.
And the response essentially was, why? We still have to be out here for a certain number of hours and we still have to do the job. So why would we do it quicker? We just have to right. fill time. And that I think that kind of is emblematic of that fact of not having a competition, of not right. doing things more efficiently because there's nothing to gain by doing that.
Right.
Definitely. It's sad.
It is a sad state. But we've got to keep, you know, putting the truth out there. And, you know, hopefully we need all the eyes and ears on this and the people following and commenting and engaging and sharing this content, because for both of us, you know, it's all about just being heard. And so you decipher, you make your own decisions, but here's the information. And if you can't get that information to people, then you really, society is at a great disservice, I think.
Yeah, I am starting to see, well, first of all, I know that you can vote with your money.
Right.
We see that happening with Disney and all these companies, Walmart, Bud Light, et cetera, Target.
Right.
But in the private school system, what is the other option? Is it just homeschooling? Is that the way to really?
Their school's not pushing it. They are smaller a lot of times. I mean, the school my kids are in, they're not pushing it. So, you know, there are also a lot of options though with the homeschooling. I mean, it's not like the old days where you're sitting at home with a bunch of books and you're teaching your child. Like there are collectives, there are groups, there are places you can go for 3 days a week and take this class, that class. So there's an enormous amount of help and, you know, people, you know, message us if you need any insight or information on how to get connected, you know, and find places within your cities that are, you know, whether they're not putting out that narrative or where you want to join in with groups. Because we have people all the time that are letting us know, you know, hey, we have this school and that school that is, you know, they're fantastic and they're not doing all this.
Oh, that's great.
You have to also, you know, you absolutely have to do it with your money. I mean, you've got to stop donating, contributing. I don't care if it's just for to count as, okay, I've given, so I'm considered a contributor. Even that, you know, the money's got to be pulled. We've had millions pulled from elite wow. schools in Atlanta because of what we've exposed. So foundations pulling money, people taking them out of their estate planning, and that's what needs to happen just on a continual basis. Just more people removing their money from places that do not represent their values or beliefs.
Yeah. And so I can see this coming to a culmination, especially in the university system where you have massive donors now that are pulling their money from Harvard, et cetera, because
right.
of the anti-Semitism. So you're losing all this booster of money. Sure, you have a lot of money in the accounts. But if the people that are graduating that have been indoctrinated for in this generation,
right.
if they're going to go and earn money and then donate it to the school to just become even more of an activist organization, as a business owner, why don't I just stop hiring from your schools? Because I know what comes right. out of there. I believe Bill Ackman and Dave yeah. Portnoy have stopped hiring Ivy Leaguers.
Exactly.
So at what point does it become a pejorative to have gone to an Ivy League school?
Right. I think it's already, I mean, there's their quote of the road to hell is paved with Ivy League degrees. I mean, it's just so much just bad coming out of the Ivy Leagues. And that's why there's so many schools in the South that, I mean, folks are running to, I mean, from TCU, Auburn, you know, Alabama, Samford. There's a ton of schools in the South that they're just like, no, we're really trying not to do yeah. all that. And not that there's not rogue administrators, teachers, people that come into those schools and organizations, because it happens all the time. But for the most part, those missions are kind of being held.
I think the last thing that I was going to ask is the accreditation of schooling. So I've heard Jordan Peterson talk a lot about that. And to be honest, I don't know that much about it other than, you know, kind of like what I've heard from people. But I've heard that the accreditation industry has been just ransacked through by these Marxist leftists. What's going on with that? And what are the issues facing school, you know, institutions trying to get accreditized?
Well, I think there are some nuggets of that I don't fully understand, to be honest. And I know that there are many organizations that are not entrenched in this woke Marxist, you know, thread. And some of it is, you know, there's Christian organizations, and then there's, I think, a smaller like Southern organization, not the SAIS, but it's another one. I can't remember the acronym for it. But you know, a lot of it is, you know, these schools need to understand they have options. They do not have to buy into this. They do not have to go to these, you know, accreditation organizations that are fueling this type of content. So, you know, whether it means maybe they're less competitive seeming, you know, the truth of what these schools are actually putting out is really the proof of the pudding. Yeah. So it's, you know, a Christian school where we are, you know, there was concern of, well, are we seen as competitive as some of these other schools? Because we are Christian, or we're aligned with a Christian organization. It's like that really has nothing to do with the content you're putting out, you know, as a school. And my child is getting a better education now than he ever did at this, you know, super elite private here. I mean, it's phenomenal, the holes in his learning that he came out of the school with. So it has nothing to do with really, it's really all about the content of what you're putting out. So yeah. These accreditation organizations, it's kind of this over, you know, this umbrella of sorts. But I think, you know, those schools have got to disassociate themselves from them. And it's, you know, they've got to disconnect, because it's truly a poison that they're injecting into these schools, these private schools.
Yeah, there's, you know, I was thinking the other day about Amish people. Yeah. I rode my bicycle across the country in 2020 during COVID, and through Eastern Pennsylvania, it's Amish country. And I saw a big group of children at kind of like sitting outside in a circle, and there was a teacher teaching them.
Right.
So I started thinking, what exactly are they learning if they don't use computers, et cetera? So I went online and I was kind of researching, and apparently, and I don't know if this is correct, but the average intelligence of an Amish person is the equivalent of like an eighth grader or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, I was like, oh, well, you know, that's kind of dumb. Literally and figuratively, like, why wouldn't they teach her? And then it kind of struck me that they learned, sure, like book smarts, I guess, science wise or whatever.
Yeah.
But what they have is this insanely strong sense of community and morals. Yeah. So I started questioning myself. I mean, I was riding bikes like 10 hours a day, so all I did was think. But yeah. I started thinking about what is more important in a community. Is it just what you know about, like, let's say the moon, or is it like what you know about other people and how to interact in community? And I had this really long thought process going through all that, and it was a really interesting thing to kind of this rabbit hole to go down.
Right. Yeah, it's insane. I'll tell you.
No, it really is. And, you know, I wish we weren't living in a world like this, because I love space. I love science. I love just things. And I initially was making videos about just things that I like, right? Like technology and AI and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I saw all this stupidity happening, and I'm like, wait, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm living in the time where Marxism is back. And we have to now fight it again.
Yeah. It's phenomenal, a voice like yours and where you come from, to speak to that. Because to me, I'm going, I can speak to a lot of things, but I'm a, you know, white woman, you know, can't necessarily have the credibility in speaking to some of these things that, you know, others can. But, you know, to me, it's just all about the truth. Like, I want the best for our society and communities, and to have actual community, not this, you know, manufactured community that's being pushed. And so for me, it's, you know, trying to thread some authenticity and truth and educate those that are getting a barrage of a narrative from somewhere else. Like, get off of CNN, get off of Fox, get off of MSNBC. It's not about the Democrat Party, the Republican Party. This is about good versus evil. And if people don't tune in and plug into that, and people that are putting out the truth, then we're done.
That's a great point. And I also want anyone listening to really understand that what's happening now, this movement, this ideology, it's not something that supports democracy. It's literally Marxism, which 100%. Is not about a democracy. It's communism. It's slavery. Right. It's literal slavery, right, when you get to that point where you have no freedom, yeah, no individuality, no rights, no choice.
Right.
So we're fighting slavery, yet that's what people are pushing
for.
We're
being enslaved, right. It's all just about these individual identities, you know, and the minutiae of everyone and our differences and the focus on that. Just dividing everybody, yeah, even further.
Well, I'm really glad that there's people like you, you know, who are in the fight for sanity and for logic, right, and just for being a good person. And I love that people are reaching out to you for help on how to maybe, right, find a private school or how to navigate those waters.
Right.
And where would be the best place for people to reach out? Would it be the your Instagram or?
So we're on Instagram, education_Veritas. And we also have a website, educationveritas.org. And we can be messaged through there. Message with people all the time on a myriad of topics, from, you know, personal stuff. I'm dealing with this with my child, to, you know, as a city, state, what can we do? Or is there legislation, you know, that can be drummed up to sort of support this effort going forward to kind of protect children and the truth going forward within our education system?
That's incredible. And the work you're doing is very much needed, because, you know, we all play our part. I don't know much, right, about, I mean, I'm learning more now, you know, speaking to you now for a few months, right, but before that, I really didn't know. I knew something, right, was happening, but I didn't understand it. And, right, and you know, it's essentially what kind of what I see is in the corporate world, they're using the same gameplay that they're using in the corporate world,
right,
in the educational world, where they're just
exactly
pushing, and then say, you know what, there's a deficiency here, but I can fill it with an expert who's been, yes, you know, indoctrinated. All you have to do is pay them $100,000 a year, right, and exactly, they'll tell you how to do what you already know how to do.
Right. 100%. 100%. Well, you're not in a minority there that you don't see and understand what's going on. I mean, people that we're putting it in their face, they're going, I don't know that it's happening here. You're like, yeah, it really is. It's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the first time that I really realized it was my brother. He's in university now, but a few years ago he had this book, and I went over, you know, and I was like, oh, what is this book? It's about white fragility.
Yeah. Said, Robin DiAngelo.
Why are you reading this? He's like, they just literally, it was just like one of those books that they gave us to read. And that was back then. And even then, without really like researching anything about it, I'm like, this is stupid. Your school is having you read this to you. And he goes, yeah, it's just a thing. I got to write a report on it. So
right, it's every
how far
day
we've come, how yes far we've come.
Exactly.
Well, I see the tides turning already. I see the counter to the revolution already in place. And, you know, I talk about this a lot with Michael and Gentry, is that there is like a ramp up phase where people, this is all new. It's like a new toy. So right, people are like, wait, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then they learn about it little by little. And then once they have enough information to fight it, then right, with gravity, they can say, no, this is stupid. Instead of like, well, I'm not really sure, 'cause I don't know enough about it.
Exactly. Yeah, with knowledge comes a better ability to fight it and call it what it is. You know, it's the sitting back and, you know, just being quiet on all of it. That's not winning the day with this agenda.
No, and it's beautiful to see people in my DM, and I'm sure you see it in yours as well, where they're like, thank you for talking about this stuff because I can't do it or I'm afraid to do it.
Yeah.
And when I say, just do it, who cares? Like, what's the worst that can happen, right? Like, you're going to be talking whatever you, or you're going to say whatever you want to say and feel better about it instead of always feeling like a slave, which is what we want you to feel like.
Right. And just pin up. I mean, the stress of kind of, you know, feeling hopeless, helpless, you know, on this entire front, I think that's tough to navigate for me. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for so much for sharing your time with us. Education_Veritas. Make sure you get a hold of Kate if you have any questions regarding the school system. If you're a parent and you're worried about what's happening in your school, they can definitely help. Education Veritas, it's an amazing nonprofit. So check them out and get involved. Thank you so much, Kate. And I will see you at AmFest.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And we will see you later.
Sounds good.